Your only local news radio. 97.5 KTBB-FM. Troop Tyler Longview. KTBB Tyler and KTBB.com.
Good morning and welcome once again to In Focus. I'm John Sims, and joining us this morning again for the second time in just the last few weeks, Christina Folsom with the East Texas Human Needs Network, talking about what you do from an entirely different angle since the whole coronavirus pandemic began. And there have been a lot of changes. You still have to meet the same needs, only the needs have basically increased and changed a lot in the last few weeks. With all that said, good morning, Christina. Great to have you with us again.
Good morning, John. Thank you.
Don't forget, In Focus is available online. Just go to ktbb.com/infocus. In Focus is uploaded to our website by the day after the show airs. Christina, things were so much different in earlier mid-March. They were already beginning to change, but back then we just kind of brought you in for a basic rundown and recap of what the East Texas Human Needs Network does and the things that you and your partner agencies have had to do since then have just been mammoth. Like everybody else, we've had several shows on this in the past few weeks talking about the coronavirus pandemic from different angles, the business angle, just the general public health angle, the philanthropy angle, and now it's time to learn about what's being done within that human needs nonprofit community to help these folks who are so much in need. Let's start again with just a general rundown. What is the basic purpose of the East Texas Human Needs Network, coronavirus pandemic or no coronavirus pandemic?
And our purpose really is to work and coordinate efforts, a collective impact, collective action approach of all nonprofits, researching what are the greatest needs of our impoverished community, and then working collectively to address those. Part of it is an education program to help people understand poverty and how to work well with those families that live in generational poverty. And then we also have a directory where people can find assistance in their times of need.
Mm-hmm. And over the past almost 7 years, I guess it was around August, almost 8 years, August of 2012, I believe, when you got going, you have accumulated just a huge number of partner agencies, different nonprofits around the community, educational institutions, businesses, people working together, meeting on a regular basis as can. And we know that's a challenge or has been a challenge because of the stay-at-home order, which just got lifted. But that's basically what the East Texas Human Needs Network does on a day-in, day-out basis. Now we talk about how things have changed and how you and your partner agencies are still working, I dare say, feverishly to keep these needs met, even though people are so limited in their ability to access those services. And one of the things, I guess, really front and center right now, one of the things I know you really want to emphasize is a project that you have initiated on very short notice, and we've all had to work on short notice during this, isolation housing. Let's talk about that, why you're doing it, how it works, and how well it's been working for you.
Thank you. I think I have to begin by saying that if had Ethan not been in place and had we not had all the relationships already in place, we would not have been able to step up and do this as quickly as we have or as effectively as we've been able to do it. Really what it comes down to is one of the worst outcomes of a life in poverty is homelessness. And all of the guidelines and policies that have been instituted for our protection and the protection of our neighbors are really based on the principles of stability, of having a home. And unfortunately, 17% of our community in East Texas does not have that stability. So for them, not only was it difficult, for many it was impossible to be able to wash your hands for 20 seconds when you don't have running water or soap, to be able to miss work if you don't get paid, to be able to stay home when you must go to an organization to get food or medicine. All of those things that seem easy for so many of us that are stable are virtually impossible for people who live in poverty.
And what has been done? You went ahead, you pulled some people together, again, on very short notice, and within a relatively short period of time, you were able to set up isolation housing. Let's just kind of get a description and take as much time as you think you need to talk about how that works. And now that the stay-at-home order in Smith County has been lifted, even though we're still under quite a few restrictions, you're really in the process of transitioning out of that. So let's include that, too, and tell us where you are with all of that right now.
Great. I sure will. Thank you. So we have an amazing nonprofit community And each are doing the best that they can within the restrictions that they have, and protecting their staff and protecting their volunteers. But we found after a very short period of time, maybe a week's time, that there was a population in this community that our nonprofit sector was not able to help. And those were the unsheltered homeless individuals who have underlying chronic conditions. As you know, we do a point-in-time homeless count every year, and we did one in January of 2020 that said we had about 325 people experiencing homelessness. More than 20% of those have chronic health conditions. Mm-hmm. And as we heard from the CDC and everyone else, those with chronic health conditions would have worse effects had they contracted this COVID-19 infection. So our task was to identify those individuals and to do for them what the rest of us were able to do, which is stay at home.
Okay. And from there, you began taking care of these people. Just one aspect of this, I believe you partnered with a couple of hotels to provide what you are referring to as isolation housing. And if you can tell us a little bit about how that works and what you did to pay attention to making sure that these people did have at least temporary housing but were isolated at the same time and were being kept clean and all the things that needed to be done.
Well, we started by following the CDC guidelines. The CDC guidelines were very clear about how to address COVID-19 in congregate housing, such as the East Texas Crisis Center or the Salvation Army. They were also very clear about how to address COVID-19 in encampments. And what we also knew was that they had a CDC COVID-19 screening tool. It's an app, and so charged with a mission to reduce the infection and to keep people safe using volunteers and using the app, we set out to go into encampments, to go to feeding sites, to go to known locations, to interview individuals using that COVID-19 app. And for those that we found had serious underlying conditions, we would place them in a hotel. Those who had not been exposed to COVID-19 to their knowledge and needed protection went into one hotel. And then those that had been exposed, might have even been to the hospital and had some assessments done, went into a separate hotel. One hotel for protection from infection, and the other for those who had been exposed, an opportunity to heal.
We're visiting with Christina Folsom with the East Texas Human Needs Network. I'm John Sims. This is In Focus, and we're talking about the effect that the coronavirus pandemic has had and continues to have on the nonprofit human needs community and its clients, or neighbors, as they're often referred to. Christina, continue. I know there's a lot more to be said about how isolation housing has worked and where you are with it right now.
I think it's important to note what some of those conditions are. It's hard to imagine that someone who's experiencing homelessness and not sheltered might have multiple sclerosis or stage 4 congestive heart failure or diabetes or even a brain tumor, that we have 25% of our homeless community are children. Their vulnerability is higher also because their bodies, when exposed to harsh elements and the stress of poverty and homelessness, age at a much more rapid pace. They also don't have established connections with the healthcare providers. So they're simply brittle, fragile, the way mm-hmm. that we perceive them. And it started with one gentleman who we found on a mattress underneath a bridge in Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
It had been 45 degrees the night before.
Mm.
He was shivering. And when I met with him, I learned that he had been released from a hospital 5 days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a home, and yet a taxi had taken him from the hospital to the bridge and left him on a mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been without his medications. He had stage 4 congestive heart failure. He was unable to walk, and he didn't have any of his medications. He was exactly the type of person who we wanted to isolate and to protect.
Mm-hmm.
So it started with that gentleman. Since then, we have housed 30 different individuals. let me look at my notes here, 11 of them are children, in fact. And since we started isolation housing on April 6th, we've even had two babies born into the isolation housing program.
My goodness.
So these, this program has provided for these individuals peace and stability, perspective, but also a comprehensive case management that they didn't have access to before.
Okay, and you've been able to establish, I understand, medical homes, ensure medical care for everyone, and access health care coverage. I guess that really kind of sums up in short form what you have been able to do for these folks, and 30 of them that you've been able to help through this program. All again, and I think it just, matter of fact, I know it says a lot about your team, just the people that you've been able to pull together over the past nearly 8 years through the East Texas Human Needs Network to be able to react to this kind of a situation on such short notice and to put together a program that, based on what we're talking about this morning, seems like it's been, has been working very well for you and for your clients.
It has. There's still a level of anxiety. We are in the process now, since the stay-at-home order has been lifted, of discharging or putting together exit plans for all of these individuals that we've been helping. Some of them have a release date that is later in May, because they were exposed and they have an order that says you must isolate for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. So for them, we will continue to house but have exit plans for. For others that are now in the process of transitioning, they're transitioning to programs that we know. They're transitioning to PATH, to the Salvation Army, to Highway 80 Rescue Mission, to the East Texas Crisis Center. And yet we still have several people for whom there's not a good plan. We don't yet know how we will release them back into the community, because there don't appear to be programs designed to meet their needs. That is something that our community needs to continue to work on, and that is establishing what we call a continuum of care, making sure that there's always something available for someone in need based on their specific needs.
Again, visiting with Christina Folsom of the East Texas Human Needs Network as we continue through the coronavirus pandemic. I'm John Sims. This is In Focus. What better time than now to make sure people know how to reach the East Texas Human Needs Network if they have any questions or any needs? www.ethnn.org. Think Ethan, and that might help you remember it. Phone number is 903-216-3211, and the email is info@ethnn.org. We also want to bring people's attention, and we'll probably talk about this again later in the show, the 903help.org website, which is always, you know, pandemic or no pandemic, a great way for people to get in touch and find out how their needs can be met. One individual has an emotional support dog that's not accepted in shelters. You just never know what kind of unexpected little developments are going to come up with that. You're also still working with an organization to establish long-term supportive housing for three fragile individuals. But I guess that really kind of recasts what we've already talked about. Some people have already been settled in, a few of them, but this process, and you're hoping by what, the end of May, to have everybody settled, or is it just kind of hard to say?
Yes, we believe that by the end of May we may be able to. There may be two that we now have, they have very serious health conditions and would definitely qualify and do qualify for disability services, Medicaid, and housing. They don't yet have that, and it takes time to apply for disability benefits and to receive them. Once they do have those, it'll be much easier to place them in housing where they pay a portion of the rent with their disability check, but where they can continue to receive medical care that they weren't receiving before.
Okay, taxi, food, meals, medical care, medication. I'm just kind of going down the laundry list here. Medical equipment, clothing, so much more has been is going to continue to be needed. And there are just so many pieces to this that have to be pulled together by you and your crew. Certainly, obviously, but I'll give you a chance to say so yourself, how grateful you are to each of your partners and everybody who supported this critical temporary program.
We have amazing partners in this community, and I actually don't want to miss them. If it's okay, I'm actually going to read out their names. Is that okay, John?
I don't know why not.
All right. So the emergency response team, or the homeless response team, included Mercy Works. They actually came with me on the streets and provided some of those CDC COVID-19 screenings, PATH. The Samaritan Counseling Center has done tremendous work to check in on everyone on a daily basis and to establish relationships with several. Goodwill Industries has helped both with benefits and with clothing, all the clothing that we were able to provide. St. Paul Children's Clinic for pediatrics, Family Circle of Care for obstetrics, gynecology, and general care. Tyler Cab has been our reliable transport for everyone who needed to move either from an encampment to a hotel or from the hotel to doctor's visits. WIC actually made a home visit. They came to the hotel where we were housing at the time, three women pregnant, two of whom have had babies. But WIC actually came to us with all of their PPE, which was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Nurse Family Partnership, the Salvation Army, Gateway to Hope, and Primetime Laundry. I was actually taking people's laundry home for a little while until we ended up with so many people that I simply couldn't keep up.
Uh-huh.
Primetime Laundry is doing an amazing job helping us and washing everyone's clothes. We simply couldn't do this without all of these partners.
Mm-hmm. That's great to hear. Talking to Christina Folsom with the East Texas Human Needs Network in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, and I do say midst because it is not over yet. I'm John Sims, and this is In Focus. Christina, I want to kind of turn the page a little bit and talk about some of the agencies and some of the challenges they have had. I'll just give one example, and it happens to be the organization you used to head up. I live around the corner from them. They're known as PATH, very, very familiar in this community. We've had them on this show more times than I can count. I was out walking this morning, walked by their office, and their temporary hours are listed. It says 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and food pantry only. And that is just one example. These nonprofit human needs agencies cannot operate the way they have been operating. How has that affected their clients, or as they say at PATH, their neighbors? How have the neighbors been responding, and what have you seen as far as these organizations rising to the occasion and making things happen in spite of these barriers?
One of the first things that we did was to contact every one of our partners in 903 Help, and we asked them to please revisit their 903 Help posting to ensure that their new hours or new services or changed processes were posted, so people didn't go to an organization that had temporarily closed its doors. So making sure 903 Help was up to date was critical. I actually volunteered at PATH, and it was one of the ways in which I determined that we needed to have this isolation housing program. I volunteered at PATH for a week. This was at a point in time where we were still allowing 10 individuals in the building at a time, and it was the week after that we started isolation housing. PATH has been doing a tremendous job, as have many other nonprofits, but many of the services that they used to provide have not been available for people. So some medication assistance or rent or mortgage assistance or utility assistance, for which our federal government had put programs in place, but not all providers fall under the umbrella of those guidelines. So people were still being evicted, and people are still having their utilities disconnected and not having access to the nonprofits that were there to help their neighbors in the past has wreaked havoc on a community that was already barely making it.
So, in other words, the nonprofits are doing as much as you feel they can do to help these folks, but the damage is going to get done anyway. There's no way that they can operate at the same level and help their clients at the same level as they were able to do in the past. I know different nonprofits have different rules and policies and purposes. What about people who are not able to walk into PATH or Salvation Army or whatever agency you're talking about and visit with their caseworkers? What do they do? I know telehealth help is available, and I believe that term was first used by the hospitals pretty much on a national level, certainly here in East Texas. But people don't always have access to computers. What have they been doing? How have they been finding ways to work around that?
Well, many people are not getting the care that they need. Simply put, they're just not getting the care that they need. And it's no fault of the organizations that normally are there to help them. They simply don't have the ability to do so. I think many are doing more on the phone than they used to do on the phone. And yet there are policies or regulations that require that they have certain documentation, Well, individuals can't bring you documentation. They can't fax it to you. They don't have a way of emailing it to you. So things that we could do in the past, including getting a birth certificate or getting somebody's Social Security card or getting an ID in order to get additional services, are simply not there. I do want to say nonprofits like PATH, for example, are still helping 120 or 140 families a day with food assistance. And it's those families that no longer have a paycheck. It's those families that I say, you know, many of us have the ability to stay at home and to stay protected. People in poverty have to get in their car or go for a walk to go to organizations to get food. Often they don't have access to a mask or to gloves. Sometimes they don't even have disinfecting wipes and the things that many of us have the money to purchase, and they don't have the money to purchase, so they don't have anymore. The impoverished are really to be seen in the time of pandemic as a very high-risk group. I would say not just because of underlying conditions, but the sheer fact that you live in poverty should be considered high-risk at times of pandemics. And very well-intentioned middle class and wealthy policymakers are simply missing 17% of a community when they establish guidelines that those individuals cannot follow. And if they are not able to put systems in place to help those individuals, we're simply leaving them behind.
Christina Folsom, our guest this morning from the East Texas Human Needs Network, as we discuss the East Texas Human Needs Network's work and the work of its partner agencies during the coronavirus pandemic. I'm John Sims. This is In Focus. So, okay, the damage has been done, and unfortunately, very unfortunately for some of these folks, there's no turning back. At least some services are continuing to be provided, but the human needs community has really taken a hit. Let's just be honest about it. But in Smith County, of course, around the state, based on Governor Abbott's order, in Smith County specifically, the stay-at-home order ended at 11:59 on Thursday night. Now you're into this new phase, which has its advantages, but also more than its share of uncertainties. You've talked about how you're transitioning people out of the isolation housing program. What are you looking at right now? Are some of these nonprofit agencies going to begin offering services that are more like what they had been offering before the pandemic? Yes, no, maybe, or no way to know right now?
Well, I believe most of them, as soon as they're allowed to, as soon as it's safer, will definitely go back to what they were able to do in the past. Many nonprofits are hurting because all of this happened in a period of time where often they receive quite a bit of funding. And I know that we just had the Giving Day through the East Texas Communities Foundation. I don't know really how whether or not that has brought nonprofits to the level of funding that they needed before, or if they're still below where they needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I know that many organizations rely heavily on volunteers, and many of those volunteers are seniors who could not volunteer because they needed to be protected. Many of the volunteers are young parents, young moms, who normally are home with their kids, but and volunteer during the day while children are at school, but with children being at home, they couldn't volunteer. So nonprofits were also relying on volunteers that didn't have experience. Everything just was more difficult. Still, everybody worked hard. They put in a lot of hours. They accommodated in the best ways that they could with the limitations that they had in place. I'm very proud of the nonprofit community and everything that they've done to help as many as they can.
What can people do now? And I know that that's just, I don't know if you'd call it a loaded question or a question that, I'm sure we can say it's a question that does not have a clear answer at the moment. I'm sure a lot of the nonprofits still have a lot of questions, and we know things are going to change. There's going to be another phase of Governor Abbott's order that'll be coming out in a couple of weeks. There may be places where people can volunteer. There may be places, for example, and I'm glad you did this, you mentioned East Texas Giving Day. Philanthropy is paramount. And we had Kyle Penny with East Texas Communities Foundation on the show a few weeks ago. But based on what we know right now, what can people do right now to help you and your troops serve this population?
In this particular case, the isolation housing program, as you've heard, has provided a tremendous amount of services, comprehensive services, through existing partners. What did not exist was the housing itself, the hotel rooms. So the one thing for which we still need funding is actually to pay for the hotels in which we are housing and we are isolating people. So one of the greatest ways in our case for Ethan to get support at this point is through funding. Funding to pay for the hotel rooms where we've been keeping people isolated and safe, or keeping people in a place where they could have some peace and healing time.
And how do they do that? Well, they go to the website, www.ethnn.org. From there, it's easy to navigate to the donation tab. You can phone 903-216-3211, or you can email info@ethnn.org. And let's not leave out, for example, we just mentioned the East Texas Communities Foundation. You can always get in touch with agencies like that and individual organizations that might need financial assistance. Because, again, I'm a huge East Texas Giving Day at the end of April. But, again, too early to know if that's really going to how much help that's going to be, even though it's way, way, way better than what was going on before April 28th.
Mm-hmm.
As we come down close to the end of the show, there are so many things that individuals need to do to help get things back to a semblance of normal, and at some point, maybe we hope later this year, get back to where we were before the pandemic struck. And I'm going to give you a chance to say some of those things. And a lot of them are going to be repeat business, things that we've been hearing from NetHealth, from the city and county officials and things like that. But let's hear it. What can people do on an individual basis, and what do they need to be doing?
You would think that would be an easy answer, but I'm not sure that it is an easy answer. I guess we all want to go back to our normal as quickly as possible and yet still stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
And go back to business for those businesses that are suffering tremendously, and make sure that people who are not working are getting their jobs back, and sort of try to go back to the normal that we had before. But I think it's imperative, learning what we have, knowing what we've learned during this period of time, that there are great weaknesses in our fabric that need to be addressed. And it's usually during times like these, not like I heard you say the other day, although they are unprecedented, they shine a spotlight on some of our greatest weaknesses. And now that we know what those are, we need to step up and put together long-term plans to address them. God forbid we have something like this happen before, but those that were affected most adversely were people who were living in poverty. And if we put good systems in place, then the effect on them will be just as bad as the effect on every one of us,
mm-hmm.
and not worse.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it goes without saying, but we'll say it anyway, ETHNN, East Texas Human Needs Network, will be at the forefront. Any idea when, I know you have regular meetings. Have you been able to keep that going? And when do you hope soon to be able to get back to having regular meetings again, once a month, or however often it is, and then you have meetings in Jacksonville and other outside communities as well?
We do. We missed our meetings in March and in April. For some, our meetings are usually late in the month, and so we're hoping to have our meetings again in the month of May. Many of our training programs, all of the poverty simulations that we had in universities and organizations across several counties, all had to be canceled and are being rescheduled. All the training programs for understanding poverty for health and healthcare, all of those were canceled and are being rescheduled as we speak. So we're going to pick up all the stuff that we had to drop.
Mm-hmm. But I assume you're still able to stay in touch by, I know you are. We've been giving out this information. Staying in touch by phone, maybe some Zoom video conferencing along the way, things like that, using electronics to stay in as close touch as possible. I know you've been doing quite a bit of that. Where I was really going with that was just don't let your guard down. COVID-19 still moving in the community. Keep wearing those masks. Keep washing your hands. Keep maintaining social distancing. Great opportunity to repeat some of the things we've been hearing all along. And this is not over yet. No time to let your guard down. I think as we get ready to close the show, I think it's very important to make that point.
Stay safe.
You bet. I've been talking to Christina Folsom with the East Texas Human Needs Network with regard to the coronavirus pandemic and how it's affected the human needs community, and the answer in two words is a lot. Let's give that information out one more time. www.ethnn.org is the website. Phone number is 903-216-3211. Also info@ethnn.org if you want to make contact and find out how the situation's holding up and what you can do to help. Christina Folsom, East Texas Human Needs Network, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, John. Good morning.
You bet. I'm John Sims. Thank you for joining us. See you again next week on In Focus.